Hello, thank you very much for downloading our little podcast.
Hello.
My name is Dr. Neville, or at Leeds Book Club if you're a Twitter user, and I'm here with the delectable book elf Leeds.
Hiya.
Commonly referred to as queen of all of the literary world, or elf. And we are here to discuss three different sets of books in the first of what we're hoping will become a series of podcasts, mm-hmm. which will be going up on the blog, which is leedsbookclub.blogspot.com. The books that we've picked all have a very spooky and unearthly theme. Sound effects will be provided only by us throughout the podcast.
Because we don't want to break any licensing laws.
Yeah, and we're cheap. We're really quite cheap.
No, we're not. We're poor. There's a difference.
Yes.
Anyway, the three series of books that we are going to be talking about are...
His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman.
Excellent.
Also, The Dark is Rising Sequence by Suzanne Cooper. And finally, oh my God, what are they? Oh,
The Chronicles. The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness by Michelle Paver.
Yes. And your entertainment tonight shall be provided primarily by some Chilean Merlot.
Yes, that's Asda's £3.88 a bottle. It ain't half bad.
However, you can get wine from other retailers.
Including Boozbin.
Right, so I only read The Dark is Rising recently. This is not a childhood book for me at all. Mm-hmm. I read one on, I think, a whim of yours,
yes,
and then
yes.
you just found
we
four
got it
of
at
them.
Work. I should say I do have access to quite a lot of books working in library, mm-hmm. and we got it in at work because I believe the film was out and there was a cover.
Oh yeah, Christopher Eccleston or something.
Yeah, apparently it's very bad.
I think that it's like the it's actually going to be like the Northern Lights, isn't it?
People Which again, people is who very love bad.
No, but see, this is it. I love the Golden Compass. I really like it. You get to see the bears, and we'll get into that in more detail.
We'll
but no, I really enjoy it. It might be the sort of thing that if you're a fan of the books, you watch it and you go, "What an awesome film!" But if you're a Hollywood director, you're looking at the returns, going, "Well, nobody went to see mm-hmm. that." But no, what a phenomenal series of books. They're yep. just genuinely creepy. They are never patronising to their audience. They feature kids that aren't... Well, see, this is the thing. You know how the what are they? The Pensieves
in the Chronicles of Narnia.
Well, they're all just a bit good, really, aren't
well,
they?
Well, they are.
And then they become kings and queen, and they're better.
And then they even become better good. I mean, even the Edmund, the bad child... isn't actually that bad. He just wants... He's just kind of gets in the stranger's car to your life.
You know,
you're told not to do at school, but...
No, but you know what? His dad was away fighting a war,
yeah.
and his mum was a bit stressed.
And
I can totally see why you'd
were
be
cows,
going,
you know. You,
yeah,
you,
but you know, like, they stayed good throughout, and I was a little bit worried. There will be spoilers in this,
yeah,
by the
yeah.
way, people. But I was a little bit worried that after Will discovered he was an old
right,
one...
let's just get to the chronic, because I'm just... aware that quite a lot of people might not have read these books. They might have read The Dark is Rising, but there are actually five books in the series.
Yeah.
And it starts with Overseer and Understone, and that's where you meet the three Drew children. Jane, Simon and Barney.
Yeah, and it turns out they're kind of like our representatives in the story. They're kids just like we would have been at that mm-hmm. at that point and were a couple
All
of years
ten
ago.
Years old-ish, I think between some say
eight and twelve.
12, yeah.
Certainly the first book. The second book then introduces Will. Mm. Will is slightly different in that he's a protagonist who's grown up just like any of us would, but he, on his 11th birthday, discovers that as the seventh son of a seventh
Which
son...
Which I thought was a lovely touch.
I thought it was particularly lovely because none of the children knew that there had been that little boy that didn't survive.
That was, really
that was actually really sad. They found... He's going through his Christmas decorations and they found like little carved initials for all of the children, mm. including one... I think it was a T for
yeah.
Thomas, for a child that never survived. And it's so, it's not laboured on at all. It's presented.
You see the
There's some
and the
emotional
you
reaction.
See the mother and the father's sadness, but it's
yeah,
not like
and then they move on and they go right back. And that's really good as well. Because
I remember when I was a child having, like, ornaments and things like that that were your baby ornaments. And you would, I mean, me and my sister, we had these little baubles with our names and our dates of birth on them. Mm. And that was our Christmas baubles. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that you would... find and it would remind you of something, but I thought it was a lovely touch. And the family unit that
were so grounding
up, they were lovely. I mean, all there were six kids and they were all over the place, and so one of them was in the Navy, and they still seem like a really nice family that you'd want, the sort of family you'd want to know
it's kind of like
about, really,
with the with the exception of Amy, and even Amy makes the ensemble, you know, the Little Woman family.
Yeah.
Like, you read it as an adult and you kind of go, oh my God, that's
so
twee.
It's a family unit that you can actually figure out if it would work that way.
You really think that that makes sense. And you kick that wine over onto my white carpet and
the
I swear
The wine is far away from my foot. The wine is a good, I'd say, a foot and a half away from my foot.
We are not at all paranoid.
But no, the Doctor's rising it, then it goes on to Greenwich, and then it's the Grey King. I've got them laid out in front of me.
Basically, they follow the fundamental pattern of the Arthurian legends, and they're all about the ancient mysteries, including the Grail, though the Grail isn't exactly what we'd expect. It's also not the Indiana Jones version, which is kind of nice.
But it's the original version, the original Arthurian myth. The Grail wasn't even a Grail, it was a cauldron.
I know, but it's also not the Dan Da Vinci Code either, you know, it's not a giant woman or anything.
No, it's
but they're really sweet. They're really well-written books. And I think the fact that there are consequences, there are long-term impacts. I think in the final book, there's an albino character who kind of, to be honest, appears out of nowhere. And you're kind of like, wow, I wonder whether or not this strange, enigmatic, ghost-like creature that just appears in the fourth book is going to have... Oh, wait, he turns out to have huge significance.
Oh,
what a shock.
Cool. I got a right.
But no, there's a bit in the last book where he kind of it's that fundamental argument for adulthood, isn't it? And you've got one foot in the world of child and one foot in the world of adults.
Well,
and he has to make a decision.
That's what all coming of age books are about. It's about making choices. The last
done so well.
Again, to compare
it
directly to the Narnia books. I mean, if you compare the series of books, they are
which we weren't intending to do at all, by the way.
But you can't not. These books are written in the '70s. I'm guessing the woman who wrote these books probably grew up with the Narnia books herself. And I think they are. And Silver and the Tree, the last
certainly
book,
this.
The choices they make, when you say you can't come back in this world is over now. And again, we're going to be talking about Philip Pullman's series later on. Again, it's the choice, it's growing up.
Yeah.
And that is what, fundamentally, quite a lot of children's novels that are set around this period of your age are about, because I think the children that are reading these books want to know about that.
I tell you what, there was a piece, I believe, in The Guardian, roughly just over a year ago. It was quite soon after we'd started the book club. And I remember we passed it between each other on Twitter, delighted to have found it. But it was about the role of parents in children's literature. And they were going through what I consider to be, you know, the great series in children's literature. You start with your Enid Blyton, the Famous Five, and, you know, and you know what I mean. You move on then to the Jupiter Jones series, and there are all
Jupiter Jones. I've never even heard of them.
We'll get back to that. That's
another podcast.
We can revisit.
Another
yes.
podcast. That
but yeah, you know, then you move into your Harry Potter's, the Narnia of books, the Dark Materials, his Dark Materials, and all of them are all of the children, the whole reason why the children are so independent, the whole reason why they have access to this incredible world of the imagination is because of the absent or abusive father figure or parental unit. Whereas in The Dark is Rising, the children are supported. Their parents know that they're going off playing on the beach.
I love their mum. I love the Drew.
The Drew children have an awesome mum. Will has a great family setup. Bran doesn't, but notably the redemption throughout the book is the fact that he and his father come together. And I think it was beautiful. And I really wish that I had read this back when I read that article, because it is the article that you go, and the exception that near proves the rule is this series, where the children have wonderfully supportive adult relationships, you know, as in relationships with adults.
And it is the adult relationships in the end that save them.
Well, I think that it's the way the adults live their lives provides the template by which the children individually decide that's how they want their lives to be. Like, Will has Merriman, who he's almost
certainly... Merriman
is the only character that sort of interacts in all of the books in some form or another. Oh my God, how vicious was he in the fourth one when he basically gives Will hepatitis in order to make him ill and send him to Wales so he can fulfill the next part of his destiny. At the end of the book, there's just this part where Will kind of reflects on, like, if old ones never
really
got ill, how come I got it?
Yes, but okay.
Merriman, you bastard!
There is a mass. Right, in the second book, Will finds out that he can control fire. In the fourth book, there is a massive fire. which he does not put out.
Oh, but they explain that because there's a stone on the ground.
Oh, because there's a stone. No, but that stone comes later. That stone's with the dog. Oh, the dogs. Oh.
Oh my God.
And a relationship with the pets. In every book, there's a relationship with an animal, and that is key as well, because the children are secure. Mm. The children have relationships with animals and humans, and they are part of the wider world. And I think this book, again, it shows the environment so well. I mean, the Green Witch, the third book.
I think
book.
They're actually in a weird way, because I don't think this is the focus on the books at all. It's just
very
something
environmental
that
books.
I picked up
very
on. I actually
books.
Think that they're far more, say, pagan era
that's
than they would
I'm
be
saying,
Christian
yeah.
era.
Oh, gotcha.
There is
paganism.
No one redemptive
the
figure.
The
whole idea is the planet, we're all connected.
The darkest Christianity. The books, it's all pagan. It's all the stories and all the figures within the books, like the hunt and all of these things, they all come
whereas
from
the
very
rider
pagan
is the bishop
sides.
Of the new faith, as it were.
This is it. The dark, I think, is this Christian, well, not Christian, say, more
I mean, and this is pure speculation. It's never
in the books. Yeah, pure speculation from us. But in my view of it, as an adult reading the books, not as a child, I don't think I'd have ever picked this up as a child, not even as half as strong as you do with Philip Pullman, say.
Yeah.
The paganism within it, that the children are very, very open to and don't ever question, even though Will is a committed Christian and church, sings in the church choir, it isn't the organised religion
like,
that's the problem.
It's more like the old religion reinforces all of that's good about the new religion, whereas the new religion has developed along very regimental lines.
But it's not religion. Let's not say religion. It's that it's
spirituality.
Spirituality. It's dark versus
more holistic
light.
Versus
the dark
a very
is definitely
central figure.
The dark is the enemy. The dark is rising comes from, oh my God, where's the poem? We have to read the poem. Keep
there are several. There's it's one of those books that like you read the little poetry bits
the
in them, and I always know it from the Magician's Nephew. Is strike the bell, adventurous stranger, strike the bell and bide the danger. Mm. Wonder till it drove you mad, what would have happened if you had? And this book is exactly
the
like
fact
this.
That you know
particularly,
that off my heartbeat, sorry,
no, but
that's a little sad.
I think that Greenwich in particular is the one where the song it becomes
Greenwich.
So much part of the story.
Well, I actually want to read out a little section for Greenwich, because Greenwich is my favourite of the books. It's the third book. It's
a
more womanly book.
Yeah, it's the chick book.
It's the chick book. The main character, one of the main characters, Jane, one of the three
Drew children,
who is lovely. And throughout, you just are. Mm. She's just really sweet. And she
Am
loves
I the only
brothers,
one thinking that
her,
there's a bit of sweetness?
A little bit of sweetness at
the
end. And he gives her a stone and says, Jenny, you want this stone?
No,
Bran,
I actually don't
like,
think so. I think it was Will, because it's
no,
Will that notices
no.
that Bran saw it. Will was the one watching the two of them kind
Will's
of going,
Merlin,
hey,
he's sexless.
No, Merry is Merlin.
Yeah, I know, but Will is the natural successor to Merlin. He's his apprentice, which
and
is Bradley's
look at
son.
Guinevere, who dropped
Guinevere,
her son.
Guinevere,
who dropped her son through two centuries.
My myths.
You know, the timeline does not suggest that they are incapable of forming relationships with normal people.
He could have been Lancelot's son. It's never said, but it might be.
No,
implied.
It is said explicitly a number of times that he is the king's
son.
She had betrayed him once, but
she didn't betray him again. She knew what was good for him.
Do you know what? Anybody
time.
Who is halfway tempted to read these books is now sitting there going, oh, I get it now. I have no interest anymore.
Anyway, this is the poem and it's beautiful. When the dark comes rising, six shall turn it back. Three from the circle, three from the track. Rud, bronze, iron, water, fire, stone. Five will return and one go alone. Iron for the birthday, bronze cast carried long. Wood from the burning, stone out of song. Fire in the candle wing, water from the thaw. Six signs the circle and the grail gone before. Fire on the mountain shall shine the harp of gold, played to wake the sleepers, oldest of the old. Power from the green witch, lost beneath the sea. All shall find the light at last, silver on the tree.
It's so beautiful!
Right, if you don't need a spoiler, every single thing that is in these books
is
in
that
this
poem.
which appears in the second of the books. This is completely planned from beginning to end. Mm. The first book was published... La 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 la. Finding publishing.
It's funny though because again,
first book 65.
You just can't escape Narnia with these books because the first book, Over Sea and Under Stone, is very like The Magician's Nephew in that nobody reads it until after they've read The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
First book 65, second book 77. 12-year gap between the two, and it's completely thought out from beginning to end. It doesn't do a Harry Potter and just turn into this mental journey throughout the world.
I know exactly what you mean with the Harry Potters. I love the Harry Potter books.
Oh, yeah,
I don't even care that
Harry
they
Potter.
Become adult novels.
No.
Towards the end.
Harry Potter,
but
Harry Potter,
what I really admire about this is the story that she set out to tell. Mm. She set in five books all of whom have a unique plot and very different direction.
And you can read any of them. You could pick up, if you picked up all The Great King and read it, you wouldn't miss
stand out. Alone. You just want to read the rest of them because they're so well written. But none of them have become mammoth epochs. No. It's like she knew the story she was telling and she budgeted her time
book,
well,
Silver
as
and
it were.
Tree is 284 pages long. That's compared to, like, you've got, you know, the Twilight series, Harry Potter, all these quite more, the Philip Pullman's even, they all start off really small, nice little thin books. They end up massive chunks of your shelf gone.
I don't think the Philip Pullman ones became huge at the end. I think that the only thing,
massive.
I think we might be hitting that point now where we're moving into one of the other series. The Philip Pullman ones that were my suggestion to this, because Jess had introduced me to The Dark is Rising and
The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness.
The Philip Pullman ones were ones I didn't read until I was in university. And
really?
I can tell you the weekend that I got them, it snowed. And we had just had...
Sound effects of snow.
Yes, the sound effect that you thought might have been snow was actually just wine. Sorry about that. We were misleading you grotesquely there. The snow was not like wine.
That would have been fucking weird.
That would have been awesome, and I wouldn't have spent the weekend trapped inside reading three books.
Oh, you should eat.
No.
Philip Pullman
and
wine.
My nice story.
Anyway,
snow.
Wine.
We had a bunch of Korean students arrive, like, 3 weeks beforehand, and they woke up.
This is when you were living in halls.
This is when I was living in halls, and they literally woke up one morning, saw snow, and they all ran out in their PJs and were making snow angels. And I was able to see this, like, I was looking down at it, and a mate that was staying with me had been reading the first one, and he kind of went, "This is your type of book, just read it." And he went away for the weekend, so I read the first one, and I really enjoyed it. I found the second one in his room. I was, like, totally not ashamed about going in and rummaging through his stuff to find two books. That seemed perfectly normal in my head. Anyway, and started the second one, and that was it. I was absolutely hooked. However, the ages really annoy me. In the Dark is Rising series, it's all very age appropriate. Everything happens, everything progresses and gets slightly darker, and that's one of the reasons I think Greenwich works so
never
beautifully.
And they're never hurt. Nothing happens to them that could seriously hurt them. There's a lot of force.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like, in one of the Dark is Rising books, the sort of the leader of the dark side pulls out one of Will's sisters and goes, "I'll kill her if you don't do what I want."
Which
and
is
Will,
really shocking.
And Will
really
is horrified
thing.
And he looks at her and he goes, "I have to go for the greater good here. I will miss my sister terribly, but you're the one killing her, not me." And the Dark Rider is looking at him and he's shocked. It never occurred to him that this child would choose the greater good over his family.
Will is a little bit annoying in places,
he's
to
a
be
little,
honest.
But well, no, it's it works. It all
bit,
works.
What is his Deus Ex Machina or whatever? Yeah, that's me and my Yorkshire.
Deus Ex Machina.
Deus Ex Machina, that thing.
Yeah,
that
he does develop a power towards the end of the book, which usually saves
it's a bit like,
the day.
I know everything at all times because I read it in a book.
But anyway.
Because I read it anyway.
But with the
Northern Lights, these ones.
With the Northern Lights, I read it, I flew
through
it.
May I just say, in Neville's copy is actually The Golden Compass. This is a travesty.
It should be Northern Lights.
And I will be buying her the Northern Lights copy
yes.
of the book.
I'd like some,
this is
a nice set if you want to spring
that's
that far.
That's not a problem.
When I started the Northern Lights, I flew through it, really enjoyed it. And Lyra made sense to me. When I started the second one, Will made sense to me too. It all worked perfectly. In the third one, it really frustrated me that they're, 12, 13 years old.
And
they
stroking
talk
each other's demons.
So much. Okay, let's not even go into that. But they are talking so much like adults.
We
I
will
mean,
be going into
it,
stroking
it
demons.
It actually was the thing that really bothered me in the film, because in the book, when Lyra's calling everybody darling and dear one, and she's talking to adult men in a very grown-up way, in the book it's fine, because you don't quite accept that she's merely an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old. In the film, you're watching it going, it's just a little bit pervy, really. It's one of the things that works perfectly on the page did not
it's
work in film at all.
Rubbish.
The film wasn't rubbish.
The
we got to see
rubbish.
The bears fight.
I don't give a poo about the bears. The film was rubbish.
The first book in this
Daniel
series.
Daniel Craig is not Lord Asriel.
Yeah,
right,
I
is
know.
Jeremy
I know.
Irons. Lord Asriel has always been Jeremy Irons. Daniel Craig is not. And Nicole Bloody Kidman's Australian.
She was perfect. Visually,
she was
perfect.
She was gorgeous.
For me.
And don't get me wrong, I love Nicole Kidman. She is amazing. But
no, what bothered me was they bottled the anti-Christian element.
Yeah.
And when you take that away from
the
storyline, it's actually a bit of a feeble storyline. Mm-hmm. It is the much bigger battle with the Magisterium and all
of
that.
I love the idea of dust. I love the idea of dust. I think it's just the energy that surrounds us is what makes us human. But in this world, that all that energy is concentrated into a little tiny
and
being
I was amazed.
That goes around with you, and yeah, it's your dust.
I was amazed at how comfortably, and I've talked this over with kids as young as 12 who are just struggling through the first books themselves, because they're very grown up concepts,
yeah.
Really.
I mean
as a student in university, I was reading them, kind of going, "Holy crap, my mind is being opened
especially
here."
Especially the third book.
Yeah,
especially
that
third
one. But no, I thought it was all done beautifully. Enjoyed it. I was surprised at how universal the concept of having a visual soul, you know, the demon that goes throughout.
Oh, but how
you
much
talk
do you
to
want
children,
a demon,
adults, the first thing everybody said is,
what was your demon? Because
you know.
That's all that, but then again, that's the thing that makes you grown up, is knowing what your demon is. It's knowing who you are as a person and what that can be.
Or maybe realizing that you don't know who you are as a person. I think that
I like the fact that
even though their demon settled, they still had that on. They knew the only reason that the demons had settled was because of the journey and each other.
Mm.
And I think that they were both
stroked.
Kind of, they didn't know whether or not.
Stroking the demons. I still don't know what my demon is going to be. I change my mind about my demon all the time.
Yeah, I'm just waiting. On some drunken night, we're going to go out and she's just going to walk up to some guy and go,
"Stroke
hi, would
my
you
demon.
Like to stroke my demon?"
I'm not going to say that I've used that as a line before. But I am going to say that I might do in the future, because it's a good line. If a guy came up to me in a bar and said, "Hey, I'd like to know what your demon is," I'd be like, "Hello." He'd have to be very attractive, though, because if a geeky guy, weird, strange man...
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. If a guy walked up to that, and I'd be kind
I'd
of
be like,
what
oh,
Dungeons
okay.
and Dragons character
oh,
are you still
okay.
role-playing, you know, loser? I played D&D, but I did it at the right time.
I quit when I started secondary school. D&D because I'm not as sad. Anyway.
You also didn't grow up in a country where it was normal. In Zim, everybody did.
No, I grew up in Scarborough.
Oh, no, that's not true. In Zim, a very small number of us did. So, yes, in Scarborough, they were all busy outside singing about herbs.
Yes, yes.
Ganja baby, my sweet.
I'd just like to point out that never happened in Scarborough. My youth was not tainted by the evil, evil ganja at any time.
Never.
Just for the record. Ever.
Because drugs are wrong.
Because drugs are wrong and very, very bad. Anyway, Philip Pullman.
But while reading these books, you do feel like you're on drugs.
Oh,
because
God,
I think that the world
so
that he
much.
Creates is so real.
But it's
you
like
look up to make yourself a coffee and you're kind of... I suppose it's kind of like if you're a really avid Fringe watcher, you sort of wonder
Fringe.
Why there isn't a blimp outside your window, because you're reading about a world where it's so visually
Fringe.
Real, you know. Well, no, it's all
that ridiculous example to you.
It's all about alt verses at the moment. It's the perfect example for anybody who's watching it. But no, you do feel like you're on drugs while watching it, because it instantly and I think because I did grow up under a Western Christian, hegemony. I don't want to use that word, but you know what I mean. That was the environment in which I grew up in. The battles that the characters are going through, once it is translated, once you start to see the analogy quite clearly. It does really mimic the personal battle that somebody goes through when they decide that their faith that they have been raised in perhaps doesn't represent who they are as a person.
What's the woman in the second book who was a nun? And she's a scientist.
Yeah, she shows up in the third book quite a bit. She's the snake, isn't she?
Well, yeah.
I mean, if
the Adam and Eve
Will is, of course, being Adam and Eve, she offers the temptation. The only difference, of course, being in that once you've seen it in this context, you realise that temptation isn't by its nature good or evil.
Which is your favourite of the books? Because I think, to be honest, The Subtle Knife for me was the book that I remember the most reading as a teenager. Because, I mean, the Golden Compass came out in 1995 when I was about 10, and I was one of those kids that got to read the books first because my mum was a teacher. So I read Harry Potter before anybody else, and I read the Golden Compass before anyone else. And so I think I was a little bit young for the Golden Compass, but I remember The Subtle Knife because I read it when I was about 15, and I think I was just at the age where... You are wondering.
Well, Will is 14,
well, yeah,
isn't
14
he?
In the book, and you are wondering a little bit about yourself, and you are like, and especially with Will's situation where his mum is incapable of looking after him. That really struck a chord with me, especially, and I really didn't identify with Will, but like you empathise with him so much more than I did with Lyra, I think. I love Lyra, and I think she's incredible. I'd love to be her. I'd hate to meet her because
she's,
I'd hate her.
She isn't in the books at all, but she's a proper Mary Sue type. In that every little girl reading that book wishes they were a little. Everybody thinks she's so relatable.
Everybody thinks
she's the cooler version of you. Whereas in actual fact, I think that there were other characters that far better describe. I know there was somebody who like was talking and they were going, and even though I'm a guy, I totally relate to Lyra, and it's awful. I was looking at him going, "You're Roger. I know you. You're Roger." And I'd never have said it for love nor money, but you are a sheep, dude. Oh, you are the guy who gets sacrificed at the end of the book.
The friendship with Roger is what sets it all off, even though he's such a kind of like. He's just Roger, he's just a dude. But that's the thing, it's like it starts with really innocent, funny because and then it ends in this massive quest.
Roger's a proper character until Will appears, and you realise that all Roger was ever going to be was Lyra's childhood friend.
Mm. Again, growing up, Will is the guy who gets a stroke her demon, and that, and again, I'm not
going to. What I was going to say is,
Neville's looking at me in the kind of like, oh my god, you're such.
No, well, what I was going to lead up to there was the whole book is a journey. Lyra originally sets off from an alternative use Oxford in order to look for her friend who's been kidnapped by bad people who literally separate children from their souls.
Oh, it's disgusting.
And it really is quite foul reading about it. She doesn't manage to rescue him. He's killed by her own father after she is betrayed by her own mother, both of whom abandoned her when she was a child. And she ends up taking this epic journey through the universes in order to try and find a way to stop the leak that's happening, despite the fact that the only time she and Will have ever been happy is when they're together and working together and in the same verse at the same time. But obviously, if they do that, they'll die really young. And they end up in the land of the dead, basically. And they make everything beautiful at the end. But the beginning was just, you have to tell your life story, and any lie that you tell gets you condemned. And it's really, Lyra is an accomplished liar, and just having to tell the truth like that, finding all of your friends and realizing that they're trapped in this horrible limbo. And really, it was one of those things that, like, after the book, I knew that there were certain values within myself that I would always hang stronger to than perhaps the faith that I'd been raised in. But there were certain things where, like, the concept of purgatory has become vile to me,
see,
because of that description. Reading about it in
that, I could never become in that way religious, because when I was 17, 18, we learned about perjury in school for the first time. And, you know, I was raised Methodist. I've never even heard of perjury until I learned about the Reformation. And it's
purgatory
just
is
such
awful.
A horrible
As
concept.
Catholics, up until a few decades ago, we had limbo.
Unless
that was where unbaptized babies were
good,
sent
you get
forever.
For a bit. Yeah, baptized babies and suicides.
I just thought it's right. Just. And it really is grim. You really do appreciate how horrible certain aspects of things that seem very benevolent are. Now, one of the things that annoys me,
excellent point in these
one
books.
Of the things that annoys me though is that I know Philip Pullman did set out to make those points of the book, and
can
he makes
just
them
say,
very
Philip
well.
Philip Pullman, recently you made a little speech about libraries.
Nice awesome,
one,
by the way.
Nice one.
We are
thank
heartily
you.
There
on
with
behalf
you.
Of the public of Britain, whose libraries are getting shat on at the moment. Thank you, Mr. Pullman. You are ace.
And a star, and wonderful. I'm going to continue ripping apart something that you did, though. So, sorry about that.
Your books are a bit rubbish. But
no, the books are awesome. The books are awesome. I thought the points that he made were beautiful. I thought I really thought that they. And one of the only thing about this whole experience that really annoyed me is I read the books in a flurry. I absolutely adored them. I then make the mistake of going online.
And oh, there are some weird fan fiction things
it's
online.
No,
if
what disturbed me
Google
was an interview.
Lyra Will fanfic.
No,
it will
don't
mess your head up.
Anyhow, I came across an interview that Mr. Pullman had done while promoting the books. And in them, he said some not very nice things about C.S. Lewis. And that really annoyed me, because I think I know exactly how these books are a response to the C.S. Lewis books. I totally get that. What bothers me is that C.S. Lewis was a Christian, writing a Christian fairy tale.
And I
thoroughly respect that he did that. And by the way, Mr. Pullman, while reading the Narnia books as a child, I really didn't get the religious connotations until I was far older. Now they're as obvious to me as sugar and daylight.
I only got the religious connotations in Narnia books because I knew
that
the
there
story
was a
of
religious.
Jesus, and I just knew the story. And
I knew that the last battle
never bothered me at all.
The last battle, it all becomes very clear. But prior to that, they're beautiful stories, and I really thought, your books are doing very well. They are totally they are going to stand the test of time. I truly believe that next to your C.S. Lewis's and your J.R.R. Tolkien's and your Roald Dahl's, there are going to be your Philip Pullman's. There's no need to piss on Lewis, who is dead, by the way, and can't respond.
If Lewis is allowed to write a series of books as a Christian, which use Christian analogies, and why Philip Pullman equally is allowed to write as an atheist a series of books that damn a Christian religion, as atheism does.
But those books can stand on their own. Yeah. There's absolutely no need for a valid and talented literary author nowadays.
You don't write books. It's not like a book off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like 50 years people are going to be like, but as I say, the Lewis versus Pullman war.
Now, I do believe that subsequently, I believe that subsequently Mr. Pullman has said that that a lot of the very negative statements were kind of off-the-cuff comments that were pulled together from a series of interviews, and I do get that the Narnia books were obviously pivotal in the creation of these ones. I'm totally respectful of that. But it really bugged me at the time. It really made me sort of think a little bit less of the author. But on the reread of these books, which I did about 2 years ago, I mean, they are the morality tales. They're kind of like Aesop's fables. The reason why Aesop's fables have lasted for so long is that they predate any of our Christian mythology. These are books that children should read to learn how to be good people that don't involve them having an invisible man in the sky watching them and judging them.
But at the same time, with these books,
they're bleak. Ending is bleak.
They're bleak, but what I love most about them is that anything can happen in these books. You can fly in a balloon, you can be a witch, you can do anything.
I mean, and when we discover that the mother passionately loved Lyra and had basically spent 12 years living a complete lie so that when the moment came, she could betray her daughter for good without her daughter even knowing. I mean, realising that was heartbreaking. It was so beautifully done.
The adult characters for me, the ones I love best were are they gypsies? They're not called gypsies in the book. What are they referred to? Lord Farr and his family.
Yeah, I can't. They are clearly the Gyptians, itinerant community. Yeah.
But they're incredible.
Egyptians, yes. It's much more of an Egypt than gypsy. Yeah. But now, one of the things that really excites me is that Phil Pullman has always said that the trilogy stands alone. And then he said that in recent years, it's been niggling at him. He just doesn't think that either Lyra or Will would be completely satisfied with the ending that
Will
got.
Fights back!
No, he's seriously saying that it just pops in his head every now and again where he kind of goes, well, they kept one, and for the best reasons, they kept one of the openings between the worlds there, and it had to be, but he's just like he just can't accept that Lyra and Will wouldn't even look.
Oh,
and I mean the idea of the two of them sitting on that bench year in year out. Apparently there are people who go down and do it in Oxford.
Yeah, that's a bit sad. I would love to read, obviously, but at the same time it's a little bit like the last Indiana Jones movie. There's no need for it. Just don't do it, man.
I think that if he wrote it and he said that, like, you know, they're 60, 70 years old and they just think, fuck it, the 10 years that we've got left, I'm happy with, then I could totally believe it. If he finds as good a reason as that, then I'd read it.
Leave it.
But there is a part of me that's just like, I mean, the thing is, I've read Lyra's Oxford and the books that the very children, because he's written some books that are very children's books around them. They are absolutely lovely. They just enforce the stories. I agree with you that I don't want anything to take it, but I could totally read another one. I think, going back to your question that you asked and then refused to let me answer, I think the Amber Spyglass is my favourite. I think because they do all their growing up. Everything. The scene has been set. And I love the world that's created, that weird science fiction moment that just pops into the books.
Oh, you love your sci-fi.
But it's great because, like, they're very fantastical books, and then out of nowhere you just get proper hard sci-fi rammed in there. There's a planet, everything's on wheels, deal with it, there's nuts, it's
there
all
are
insane,
no stones
nothing
in this
makes
planet.
Sense, and then suddenly they introduce the idea of oil, and everything that's happened in the previous two books, you just go, oh, I get it. And you can even see how it's going to end. And the way that it ends. Oh.
I love the concepts of demons. I really want my own. I have no idea what it is. And in a way that saddens me, because
I think I'd like a bush baby.
Oh. You see,
the really big eyes.
Somebody said,
and it's got hands,
to me recently,
so it could, like, dial numbers for me on the telephone.
Oh no, that's just weird. No, I do my dialing
No.
I don't want my demon to do stuff for me. I just want it to be there.
See, I fall asleep and my sleeping personality gets up and does the washing up. So I'm totally comfortable with the idea of having, you know.
Right, I really need to blow my nose.
I shall put this on pause.
Yes,
and try and
right,
edit
we'll be
that
back
out.
In a minute.
And we're back.
Hello.
Right, I think that we've rambled, abused and praised his dark materials quite enough
sorry,
for us to
Philip
be in some
Pullman.
Serious libelous danger.
Sorry, Philip Pullman, you're amazing. We love you. Save libraries. Hashtag save libraries. Hashtag
yes.
Save libraries.
Yeah, we'll get off that bandwagon as soon as they save the fucking thing. Sorry. I've been so good as well.
50p in the airport. We have a little swear pot.
Because we're both trying very hard
not to swear.
Not to sound like
Navi's hookers.
I have to pretend
that I'm not at work at the moment in order to stop saying F and things and bad words. So 50p in the airport. At least we're not going to do a Paxman and say cunt, so, you know.
Oh my god.
We'll edit that out.
Yeah, no, we're so not editing out. We'll put a language warning up. Take the abuse when it comes. Right, the final series that we are comparing in our Turn the Lights Up, It's About to Get Very Dark podcast debut.
Hello.
Oh, we should call this like the prologue. And the next one could be chapter one. Oh god, and if we do any mini ones, they could be excerpts. Sorry,
right,
off topic.
This is Harry Potter. I ain't doing any, like, you know, bandwagon shit. Bollocks of that.
Neither
I've sworn
she
now, I might as well carry on. Anyway, so...
Chronicles of Ancient Darkness.
All right, it's by Michelle Paver, and
it's immense.
How many books? 5 books.
6 books.
6 books in the series.
Set during the age of Cro-Magnus.
No, it's...
Is it after
35,
that?
35,000 years ago.
Oh, it's well after that,
yeah,
then.
Not even 35. That's kind of the Cave Bear.
If you've
which
read
the new book is out, by the way, in March of Clan of the Cave Bear. Buy it.
If you've read Clan of the Cave Bear and you enjoyed it, this is a book to get your children. Torak is the main character, mm-hmm. and he is in the very first page of the very first chapter mm-hmm. of the very first book. His father gets mauled to death
by a bear.
You just can't get more, you know, caveman-esque,
I love
really.
It. I absolutely love it.
But it's great. It's great. Sad. And you immediately feel awful about it. But it gives you that concept that in the world that Torak lives in, people die. It's the equivalent of shit happens, get used to it. Do you know what I mean? And it's brilliant. I once again, I cannot laud the books enough for not patronising to their audience.
No,
I'm so sick of children's books that
much,
are so cute.
How much, oh my god, a character is going to die in Harry Potter, book 4. And it's like...
And it's one of the grown-ups.
And it's a grown-up who you only know for a book. It's not like, you know, Dumbledore dies at the end of book 2, or on the first page Harry sees both of his parents called to death by a bear.
I've got to
like,
say,
just,
like,
the
aftermath of the books, the aftermath of the Harry Potter books, I really felt for that character that died, that we're not going to name, but that adult character that died. I felt awful about it, but in retrospect, that Weasley twin... That was heartbreaking.
Anyway, off topic.
The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness. We're just going to keep saying the title
The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness.
Oh my god, we can turn that into a rap.
Yo, I'm Torak, and I'm here with my Wolfman main sister.
Torak
is here. Yo.
After his father dies, Torak basically finds a. The first book is called Wolf Brother, and he realizes that within the clans. There are certain people who have gifts, and Torak is ultimately to discover that he is a spirit walker. But
he
one of his gifts is
the
that
animals.
It's not quite as odd as it sounds.
Well, no, because
throughout
really
fiction and throughout history, there have always been characters who've related emotionally
and
to animals very well.
I speak to the animals and hear what you're saying.
Yes, but I mean, when he spoke to the animals, they didn't attack.
Anyway, he meets this orphan.
He meets this orphan wolf, and the two of them form their own. Part clan, because Torak is human, but part wolf. Wolf
God.
Coven.
Coven. Coven. That's witches.
Hack. Fucking shit.
Coven. A wolf coven.
Hack.
A wolf. No, it's going to be Coven from now on.
Yes, you
wolf
know.
Witches.
From
oh my God.
There might be some
witches.
Very careful editing from this point onwards. Clearly, the
wind
is working.
We've had another glass of wine. You might have noticed.
Anyhow, to get back to the
Chronicles
quite serious point
Chronicles
that I'm making,
darkness,
he bonds with this wolf, and they become part clan, part pack, And he is, at the end of the first book, taken in by the Raven Clan. All of the clans are described so fantastically.
Oh, God.
There is, throughout the books, a little bit like, isn't it coincidental that Torak's journey, which spans these six books and is really significant, and it's all about redeeming
and finding
his
out,
father.
Again, finding out who you are and finding out your family.
It's the journey. Again, there's the absent parental figure, although in this case it was through horrific circumstances.
On the first page.
Now, it is a little bit like, isn't it a handy coincidence that his journey takes him across eight or nine of the major clans and landscapes.
I love that.
But it's so beautiful.
Every book was written in a different place. I mean, the first book is set in the woods.
It basically goes woods, sea, lake, sea, ice.
No, woods, sea, ice,
lake,
swamp,
mountains.
Yes.
So he basically covers all of the geographic. It's a little bit like reading The Clan of the Cave Bear, where you go, look, she happens to have spanned half a continent in 4 weeks. How handy.
If you've been watching the Bruce Perry's Arctic recently, which is great, you should, because Bruce Perry's amazing.
She has such a crush.
Such a crush on Bruce Perry. The third book is set in the Arctic, and the way they describe the mittens that they wear and how they live. I mean, I love the cold places. I do not feel comfortable in hot weather at all, and I would love to go and experience what they experience. And the fact that the woman who wrote it, Michelle Paver, and the sixth book won the Guardian Children's Award last year, and
deservedly so.
Not just the first book should have won it. Every book should have won it. They're great, great books. Some of them are weaker than the others, but the first one, the third one, and definitely the last one are fantastic. And Ren, the other character, I love.
I don't know if I would say that some of the books are weaker than others. I think the beauty is that they cover such varied geography and storylines. And again, it's like
historically researched. She went
to
all
those
places. She stayed for like a month in a Norwegian wood, living in a cave.
But in terms of the storyline, like the Dark is Rising, every book covers such a distinct range of things.
Yeah.
I kind of think that there were bound to be things that interested me more, and ones that didn't. For example, I thought that the parts up in the mountainous regions, I've never lived in a mountainous region, that fascinated me. The
weird
parts
caves
by the sea, I thought were
fascinating.
Oh, you see,
the sea one was fantastic, because I am from the sea, and the sea one itself, and the way they live, and the way they use the water, and
the way they look at the world, though. I mean, each of
the clans
all have their various traditions, and even though they don't, they're not the same in every case, they come from the same root, because they all honour different animals. Some will honour, you know, the forest dwellers honour animals of
the
forest.
They have tattoos, and they have markings on their bodies, and they're very real people. The Raven Clan, for example, have raven feathers. Stitched onto, so you know what clan you are by the animal skin that's stitched onto you.
There is a pride and a sense of community.
And the respect they have for nature. I mean, the entire part, the baddies, because it is very quest-based, as it were.
The baddies are trying to control the many for their own good, whereas it's almost
anti-fascist.
If you were in the 1950s, this book is a little bit red, to be honest. It's all very societal, community.
Reddy green colour, like a muddy brown colour, shall we say.
But they are phenomenal books.
Absolutely beautiful books.
And again, okay, now the thing that links the three books in our own minds, if nothing else, is that in each of the books, there are bad people who assist in the creating bad events, but the ultimate foe isn't a tangible human being. The ultimate foe is the dark.
It's forced.
And the dark in the three books each describes different things. In the His Dark Materials,
again,
it's ignorance. In The Dark is Rising, it's
fear.
Ritual and fear without any...
And no connection to nature or anything.
It's selfish love rather than a shared one. And in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness, the dark is in one sense, it's quite literally dark. But it's also... It's the part that you let out whenever you do something wrong.
Yeah.
It's the bits of us that we've let go.
It's
the bad intentions.
It's not feeling guilty about it. It's the feeling you get when you drop a piece of litter on the ground and you don't even think about it.
I actually think it's the feeling you get when you drop a piece of litter on the ground and you look around, and when you see there's no one
there,
you walk on.
That's the dark. Because if you don't feel
if
that
you don't
guilt,
know that it's a bad thing,
if you don't feel that guilt, and if you don't feel like with nature,
ultimate
lack
of conscience.
I try, but we don't do enough. I mean, the planet is dying. And it's not global warming or whatever, I don't really understand the science behind it, but consuming on the level we do is wrong. I think. And it's the lack of guilt that you have with that, which is the enemy in Chronicles of Ancient Darkness, and that's why I really like the books, because it's not overtly anything. Like Philip Pullman's, they are overtly an atheist novel. It's very much, this is a bad thing, this is wrong, and it's something that you can recognise in the world. But
I will agree and disagree on that, but let's go as though I had just agreed.
Yeah, I mean, like...
I mean, one of the things I like within the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness is that the concept in right and wrong, it's so much simpler than our modern religions allow.
It is wrong to want to control people. It is wrong to kill. It is wrong to, you know, do. It is wrong to control. And Will himself, again, he feels this depression. He is properly torn because he has family connections.
Will?
Not Will, Torak. The other two have Wills in them. And Torak, who I loved and would have a massive crush on. Ren as well.
Ren is the most phenomenal character.
Honest
she
to
is
God,
destined
she's a big,
to be,
strong woman.
She's
nice
destined
woman.
To be a mage. Mm. And she has all
which
of the
like
signs.
A shame.
And she's really industrious in that she learns everything, but her worst nightmare would be that she actually becomes a sage. And she far more than Torak, and I think in a way that was quite cleverly done, and I'm not saying this in a sexist way, I'm saying this anthropologically speaking, she grows up a little bit quicker than Torak does. I feel like she has a far...
She's a
from about book five, she has a far better concept of what the future will bring. She only knows one thing, that there is no vision of her future that doesn't have Torak in it.
Yeah.
Torak, in the meantime, is still at that, oh no, you should go away from me because I'm ultimately bad for you kind of thing. And she's kind of
very
patient with him.
Which is a
very
mature
attitude,
really, for a 13-year-old
but,
boy.
Well, no, it is. I mean, they both develop along beautiful lines. And I think that part in the final book, when Torak realises... There is a part in the final book.
Again, fanfic.
And it's not
Torak
overt.
And
it's not... And it really isn't... sexualized in any way,
it's just
which
sweet.
Is
it's
really
kind of
lovely.
Like a, let's just look.
But there's
to
a moment in the
books than, let's get it on
when Torak realizes that he might lose Ren, and he kind of goes a little bit mad. And from that point onwards, he kind of unconsciously behaves as though she's a part of him, but overtly he's still struggling and he's still trying to send her away and everything. And I think that there is a little bit, and far more than in the other books, where it happened in every book so you forgave it. In the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness, it really happens terribly quickly. There turns out to be a wonderful turn of events.
Oh yeah, it's all very much kind of like, and this massive thing
you
happens.
You want to talk about your Deus Ex Machina, that character is it.
And this happens, and then this happens. Well,
but
with the books as well, it explores friendship a lot.
Yeah.
And friendship is explored in all the books, but I think it really is, because with Torak has nobody. Mm. He has no one on his side.
Could even there be any better book?
Cast him out.
Can there be any better message, though, within a book than to say that the only love within which we really redeem ourselves is that of friendship?
Because that's friendship.
Because you can be in love with someone and they will forgive your errors, but your friends will want you to improve on them.
Mm.
And I think throughout the books, all of the characters become better people because of who they have around them.
Well,
and it's not sexy.
Telling,
it's not romantic. It's that
human friendship and the fact.
But
that
also
it is
that
valid.
The relationships that you make in your teenage years. They are what, if you have healthy relationships with people in your teenage years, you will probably have healthy relationships throughout the majority of your life. And all of the characters, they've all come from quite dark backgrounds. Torak's dad is dead and he never knew his mother. Ren's mother and father are both dead and she's being raised sort of collectively
by her uncle.
Yeah. Within his dark materials, Lyra's never known a home and Will's mother
even
is
the
really...
Oxford scholars are lovely.
The Oxford scholars are lovely, but it's not an ideal arrangement for a young girl growing up.
No,
and in
no.
The Dark is Rising totally contravenes that, in that both of the families of protagonists, as in Will's and...
It all comes a bit of a shock. It's more of an adventure story though in that
way.
Far
more a romp than whereas
the other
two series are more, much more
the
mission oriented.
It's definitely a romp.
But I think that one of that aspect of family, of friendship, that redemptive nature, and they all of them transform. They all go from being the children that they were to the adults that they were destined to be, and they're their best possible selves. Mm. It just leaves you hopeful. Mm. I'm rereading Anne of Green Gables at the moment, and it's the same. No, but it is. You get the same sense, and you love them. She's here, like, oh
no,
god,
no, don't get
she
me wrong.
Loves
I
them.
I do love Anne. I
but
do.
No, I'm reading the books,
there.
And I'm kind of I'm thinking about the child that I was and the teenager that I was. And I'm finding it amusing to reflect that as an adult, I'm far more like the child that I was than I am the teenager.
Most about these series of books, I mean, I've got in my library, which does mostly teenagers and young adults, I've got the Philip Pullman series, I've got the Dark is Rising, the second book, but not the series, but I am going to get the series, because I'm in charge of the budget. And I do have... And
power corrupts.
Power corrupts. Absolute power buys more books.
Right.
And the students love them. Like, I do a reading challenge at the moment, and there's one student who is a mature student, I think a bloke about my age, and he came in and he read the Twilight series. I think his missus probably got him to read the Twilight series, and he read the Harry Potter series because he thought he had to read it, and then he said, what shall I read next? And I gave him the Philip Pullman book, and he said, oh, is this the film? There's a Golden Compass, and my heart just wept a little bit. And
I love that film, by the way.
He came and brought the Amber Spyglass back the other day, and honest to God, he had tears in his eyes. Like, he was like, thank you, the series is amazing. And I've got him on the Torak series now, which I don't think he's going to enjoy half as much, because I think...
Oh my God, sorry, just because it's popped in my head, and it's such an amusing anecdote. Tell them about that woman. You lent a boy Harry Potter. Tell them about his mother.
It wasn't Harry Potter. It was the... oh God, the your own adventure ones. Choose your own adventure. You know, the choose your own adventure books are like, you are a wizard or you're a dragon slayer or something ridiculous, and you have to
go to page five
if you want to climb the stairs. Go to page seven if you want to find the magic amulet, and you kill monsters on the way. But you kill monsters using maths. So there's a little tiny dice at the bottom of the book, and you flick through them, and you roll dice, and the amount of dice that your monster has and you have equals you killing the monster or you dying and having to go back to the beginning. So it teaches maths and it teaches literacy, and it's a great
move
series.
Move on.
I lent this book out to a woman for her son, who was 16 or 17, and she came back saying that I had introduced him to sorcery.
Witchcraft!
I did not put my coven schedule, my coven of wolves that I go to every week. There's me, there's Mama Wolf from the Jungle Book, and we sit there and we cast spells. But I did not give him my coven schedule. I didn't. You know, I personally believe
he's 16
books,
years
these
old.
Books are fantasy books. The books we discussed tonight are fantasy books, and there's nothing wrong with that. You shouldn't just be grounded in the real world all the time. And you have a lot of children's fiction that is very much grounded in the real world, and there's a place for that. And I think that is incredible. Like Jacqueline Wilson, for example, all her books. There's no fantasy element in her books, but her books are fantastic.
Oh my God! Welcome to the world. Oh God!
Welcome to the world.
No, sorry. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Oh,
Judy Bloom.
Good God. Oh. Bloom. And Anne Fine.
And they're totally
well.
Realistic, as long as you're a kid who grew up immediately after World War II.
Anne Fine, who is at the, oh gosh, Huddersfield Literature Festival, so coming up soon. If you Google that might be interesting. But
she's like a walking Leeds guide, this woman.
I really am. But
right, I'm going to make you do that thing, because we've been at this now for 50 minutes. And
what, the second half?
No, the whole thing in total.
I'm really sorry, we've gone on for hours.
She's a lovely girl, but she's not that bright.
Oh, that's not fair. I have dyscalculia. I don't know time.
Okay, we're moving on from that incredibly inaccurate statement. I'm going to make you do that thing that you hate to do.
Oh, God.
An overall rating for each of the series.
You can't do this to me.
You can either go an overall rating for the series, or you can do it
per
book by book.
Can't do it per book.
His Dark Materials, book one.
Oh,
out of 10, if you please.
Oh God, you can't make me do that. Well, it's his Dark Materials. The series as a whole has to have a 10, but
well,
the books are different.
So 10 out of 10 for the series.
Yeah, gotcha. But,
and I would give that a 10 out of 10
as
well.
But individual books, I mean, the Golden Compass, 9, something like 9, Mammoth Spyglass, 8. But how is
Mammoth Spyglass?
The Mammoth. Mammoth Spyglass.
Is somebody having a Clan
of
the Scave Fair moment?
Oh, everyone, I'm having Clan of the Scave.
I would agree with all of those, except I would give an 8 to the first one and a 9 to the third one. Dark is Rising. Overseer
Stone, I'd give probably an 8. Over Darkest Rise, I'd give a 10. It's amazing.
It's great. 10 for Greenwich.
10 for Greenwich, definitely.
I'd go 7
King,
for Grey King.
Yeah, for
okay,
Grey King.
We're great.
And Silver on the Tree, I'd probably give a 7 as well, to be honest, because bits of it don't make any fucking sense.
But the ending is fantastic.
The ending is fantastic.
The end,
massive,
the final
massive
three chapters,
book,
I'd give like 9
sense.
Out of 10. And then there's like a whole bit in the middle where I'm just like, you lost
okay,
the plot a little bit.
Where are we now?
Chronicles of Ancient Dark. Oh, overall series for The Dark is Rising.
Oh, 10 again. All these series are 10 out of 10. That's why I'm doing a podcast on them.
Right, then I'll do The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness. Okay. I think the first one I would give a very solid 9 to.
Yeah.
And the last one I would give a 9 to.
Yes, I agree with both of them.
Oddly enough, I think I would give an 8 to 2 and 5. And then I'd probably give a 9 again to 3 and 4.
No, I'd give a 9 to 3. To 2, I didn't like so much, I'd probably give it a 7.
Okay.
To 4 and 5, I'd probably give 8 each to.
8 and... We're agreed on 5 for 8.
Yeah.
So the only one that were different then is book 4 and book 2. I agree that all of the series are 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I'm just being cruel now because the we're recording and I get to be. Which
is your
if you could
series?
Only recommend.
Oh no! Oh well, right.
Oh
okay.
My God! Talk about your Sophie's choice. I'm not making you choose.
No,
between
whoa, whoa,
your
don't compare
and your
this
sisters.
To the choice that Sophie makes. Jesus Lord!
She's only got to pick two children.
Right. Let me just say, for the record, I don't agree with that statement. I don't compare books to my children. I am not a book.
She
with,
is aware that a
I
book will last far longer.
But I'm only going to edit that out later. I can't choose. You can't make me choose. Right, if I had to recommend one series.
One series
right,
and only
who
one
to?
Series.
Who to? To
I,
an
I
urgent
think
reader,
the,
to somebody who's read for a while.
The only thing that I can
them.
Say is, oh my God, this is so creepy. I can't believe I'm saying it. You and I have a 15-year-old daughter.
As the couple
crazy
that we are
as
not.
That sounds.
Who gives birth to her, though? Because I'd recommend something to your daughter.
I think we should use a surrogate, to be quite honest. We're both
right,
too
so it's just a
random
15-year-old girl.
Random 15-year-old
girl.
But
as
she's,
we were
she
all...
is a little bit more magical than the average 15-year-old
girl. So us
girl.
At 15.
Us at 15.
Okay. Right, us at 15. Oh, Jesus. And they've not read any of the series?
Not read any of them.
Well, me
which
at 15
one?
Would be Philip Pullman, because I read that when I was 15.
Okay.
But I recommend, like, an emerging reader who's not read much before... I'd recommend the Wolf Brother series, the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness.
Okay.
But to somebody who's an avid reader, who's like us now, to us now, mm. I'd recommend the other one.
No, it's fine, because I would agree with the first one. To a 15-year-old teenager, I actually think that his Dark Materials...
She can get the rest later.
...is essential
definitely.
Reading.
Yeah, no, for a 15-year-old, definitely.
Having said that, I think that I would reverse it. From the way I think that to somebody who's really enjoying books as a teenager, I would recommend the Darkest Rising series, and to somebody who's a bit older getting into books, I'd recommend the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, the essential one, to be honest, if I met anybody at any age
yeah.
who hadn't read them, the essential one for me would be his Dark Materials, because I think that the others are fantastic stories, but this is the book that's out on a mission, and I happen to.
I just see that viewpoint. No, I can't.
You know.
I think that if there was only one series of books allowed to exist in the world, then I just wouldn't want to be in that world. So I can't answer that, to be honest. Because
despite having answered the question, she
no.
Is
it,
now
if
in
it was like anybody,
it.
If it was anybody, but if it was a certain category of readers,
no, no. But you said you couldn't do that. No, I'm just saying that if it were me, anybody that I met that hadn't read them, I would recommend his Dark Materials
right.
too, because I just think conceptually. It's the others are standalone stories in their own way. This is a trilogy, and it has a big picture. And
however,
I really think the
however,
big picture there is.
You should definitely read all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You should
go out and read all of them. Okay, shut up, shut
right,
up, woman.
Okay,
say bye. Your goodbyes.
Bye.
You
it
can,
was really
you
nice to talk to you. We'll
I'll send her down to the basement.
Hopefully,
now.
I'll talk to you again soon. So bye for now.
Thank you very much for listening. If you disagree fervently with anything
which
that we've said,
do
get in touch. You can find us on Twitter as
yes.
either at BookElfLeeds, all one word, or at Leeds Book Club, or at Dr. Neville, just because I'm quirky like that. If you agreed with us, leave pleasant comments on blog, which is leedsbookclub.blogspot.com. And thank you very much. We hope to bore you again in the future.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.